from the Xfinity Studios at WVON. You're listening to American Heroes, hosted by Cliff Curry on WVON AM 1690.
Good afternoon. This is the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. I'm Cliff Kelly, and this is America's Heroes Group. I am, of course, the host. Glenda Smith is our executive producer, our digital media producer, Manny Corazzari. He's being, Titus Williams is taking his place today, and Manny wasn't feeling too well, and we hope he's better. So we really want that to happen. We're going to talk about, as we always do, some very important things. The things that are going on now are just unbelievable. I want to talk about some of our people that are sponsoring us. America's Heroes Group is proudly sponsored by Pearl's Place Down Home Southern Cooking at 3901 South Michigan. The phone number there is 877-275-5852. Now, you know, there's all kinds of things going on now because of the problems health-wise we're having throughout the nation. So what you can do, is pick up only. Pick up only. You can pre-order or pick up. Either way, a buffet or menu. So they deliver, the food is delicious, either way. So Pearl's Place still taking care of people's wanting to get some good food. Also, attorney Steve Seidman of Seidman, Margulis, and Fairman, LLP, 20 South Clark Street, 2 First National Plaza, Suite 700, Chicago, Illinois, 60603. Toll-free number, 888-837-3275. The office, 312-781-1977. America's Hero Group, also sponsored by She Serves, She Matters, partner and sponsor, National Women Veterans United. National Women's Veterans United, NWVU, is at 8620 South Pulaski Road and the lower level, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. The office, 872-731-2150. Website, www.nwvu.org. So that's all of our great sponsors. We love all of them. We have something very important. April is sexual awareness, sexual assault awareness, and National Deaf History Month for today. And America's Heroes Group Roundtable, we are globally connected with Kaiser Health News. And we are pleased to have with us on our live line, speaking of Kaiser Health, hey, who else? Joelle.
Hello.
Hi, Janelle.
Hi
Lisa.
There. It's Janelle Alicia with Kaiser Health News. How are you,
yes,
Cliff?
Yes, good. Good to hear you. Thank you so much.
You too.
Thank you so much for joining us. You're out there in D.C., right?
I'm one of our reporters in our D.C. office, but I'm actually based on the West Coast, so I'm out in Oregon.
Oh, okay. You can't get much farther away.
I know. That's true.
Well, the discussion, this is very interesting, and I know you're getting a lot of calls on this. Funeral homes. Families ponder death in the age of this problem we're having, which problem is an understatement. But tell us, Janelle, how is that being handled?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the coronavirus, COVID-19, is very serious all across the U.S., of mm-hmm. course. There have been more than 300,000 infections in the United States, and more than 8,200 people have died. So it's very serious. And one of the aspects of life that is being really upended with this crisis is funerals and funeral services, and on two ends, really, both in how funeral homes and mortuaries are handling the people who pass away, and then also how families are able to kind of mourn their loved ones. It's all being changed pretty dramatically in a short amount of time.
Well, it certainly is. And how is it being changed so that people feel safe? That's what you have to deal with.
Let's start with the funeral homes. And
right.
I've spoken to a number of them in my reporting.
Okay.
You know, mortuary workers and the people who handle all of that when someone passes away have to be very careful. And they are always very careful.
Right.
They deal with, right, infectious diseases all the time. And so they have stepped up their protocols for handling bodies after people die, so that they make sure that they don't get the coronavirus from any of the people who have passed away. For instance, they're taking great care in how they remove bodies from places, hospitals, nursing homes, other places, family homes where people die. They're making sure to even put masks over the mouths of people who have died to make sure that they don't exhale any of the virus even after death when they're being moved. And they're taking all kinds of stricter disinfection protocols to keep themselves safe and to keep from spreading the virus in their homes or anywhere along the way. So that's one thing that's been happening. Some funeral homes have been watching strict protocols for embalming patients so that they know how to handle them with even more care than they usually do.
So this is something that they have to really be careful about, obviously. But
right. The coronavirus can spread. It's a respiratory illness, you know, so it spreads through, droplets that we exhale when we cough
sure.
or sneeze.
Sure.
But, you know, those droplets can also fall on surfaces and be spread through touch. If you touch something that is infected with the virus and then you touch your eyes or mouth or nose, it can be spread that way. So they have to be very, very careful about the spread of the virus in the environment.
I don't understand why, Janelle, this is just happening. You understand my question?
Why the virus is happening?
Yeah.
Or
now, have we ever had this before?
Well, no, this is a new virus.
Yeah.
It's a new pandemic virus. And the thing about viruses is that, they can become transmissible in humans. They can mutate in a way or form new viruses, actually, is the better way of saying it. And this is a new virus that developed. It appears in an animal market in China and then found a way, to go, we think, from bats to another species of animal where it then became transmissible to humans. And once it jumped into humans, then it started spreading from human to human, and it was like we were off to the races.
You know, I'm not a biologist, but, you know, and I love animals, Janelle. But,
yeah.
You know, but I haven't seen any new ones, you know. Oh, look at that. We got a new form of elephant. We got a new form. You understand my question?
You know, viruses are tricky that way.
Yeah.
You know, they can change, and they can. This is something that scientists have been thinking about and worried about for quite a long time.
Okay, I didn't know that. So when we talk about virus, are we always talking about something that is negative or dangerous?
I would say so. You know, viruses, the flu virus, influenza,
right,
is a scary virus. Viruses can be devastating. They cause an awful lot of illnesses.
So what happened? Where are we going at this point, Janelle?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think, you know, what scientists are telling us now is that one of the things that's so very important is that people stay home, shelter in place, don't go out and spread the virus, because there are a couple things about it. Mm-hmm. It looks like it can spread without people even knowing that they have it, without having any mm-hmm. symptoms. And so even though you think you may be well, if you go out and mingle around in public, you could spread it to someone else. And even if you're not sick yourself, you could spread the virus to someone who could be made very sick by it, or even, you know, even die from it. And so that's why government officials are stressing that people need to stay home to stop the spread of the virus, so that we get a chance to develop some treatments for it, and hopefully within the next year to 18 months, develop a vaccine for it.
I tell you, this is... The more you hear about it, the worse it sounds, you know, Janelle.
It's pretty scary. It's affecting, it can infect anyone, but it mm-hmm. is especially dangerous for older people, of course. That's where we're seeing a bunch of the deaths. So those folks have to be especially careful.
We're so pleased to have her giving us all this great information, because people need to know these things. There's no doubt about it.
And I think the issue that we were going to talk about was about how this is affecting funerals.
Exactly. That's what I was going to next.
More than 8,000 people in the U.S. die from this already, so tragically. Mm-hmm. It's changing the way that families are able to mourn their loved ones. All of the VA national cemeteries remain open across the country, and they're still doing interments when people die. But the number of people that can be at a service is 10 or fewer, according to the CDC. And people have to practice social distancing, which means staying 6 feet apart at the funerals. And so it's really, as you can imagine, families aren't being able to mourn their loved ones in the way that they're used to.
That's terrible. 10 feet apart.
6 feet apart.
Oh, 6 feet apart. 6 feet apart. Well, you know, the more you hear about it, almost the worse it gets. You know, at a time when people really want to be close to family members of the deceased and all, they just can't do it.
That's very true. And what I've learned is that families are, you know, in some places that are very hard hit, like New York City right now, you know, it's taking longer than usual, to get families from the hospital, to get families to the funeral homes, and then to get them released. So there's a little bit of a backup because so many people are dying in a confined area in New York City. But all across the country, families are having to do things like make arrangements online or using Skype or FaceTime, because it's really not wise to go out and mingle with people. So they're having to change the way they arrange funerals. And then I talk to people who do basically live streaming, web streaming of funerals, and they say there has been so much more interest in people wanting. So if you can only have 10 or fewer people at a service, at a graveside service or in a small chapel or small funeral home, mm-hmm. People are wanting to do kind of webcast of their funerals. So that people can still be there and share just online.
When you think of all of the changes that have to be made, Janelle, because of this, and you with, you know, the senior correspondent with Kai of the Health News there in Washington, I guess this, you get all kinds of questions. Because this is something that a lot of people never thought they'd have to be concerned about.
And that's very, very true. It really has changed everybody's daily life, hasn't it?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And it looks like it's going to stay changed for quite some time. I mean, you know, President Trump has said now until the end of April, but the scientific experts who are studying this think it could go on much longer, through May anyway, where we have to be careful, we have to stay home, we have to work from home, and you know, basically stay apart so that we can help slow the spread of the virus, so that hospitals and our medical staff have a chance to handle the people who are the sickest.
You talk to people, of course, that are experts on this issue, and, you know, with Kaiser Health News and so forth.
Yeah.
Is there any thought, does anybody, Janelle, even mention the fact that things may go back to where they were?
Well, you know, it's going to be quite some time, and that's another million-dollar question, is when can things go back to normal? Mm-hmm. Everybody would sure like them to, but it's really not clear right now mm-hmm. when that will happen. The thing that the scientists say is that we can certainly... I'm sure you've heard the phrase flatten the curve. We can flatten the curve so that our hospitals aren't overwhelmed with the very sick patients by staying home and keeping our distance from each other.
And we'll wonder what normal will ever be, you know?
Yeah, that's for sure, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. Before we let you go, tell us something we don't know.
Tell you something what?
We don't know that you think we should, my listeners.
Oh, let's see. I guess if I could, I guess what I would say to people is, you know, so we're going through this right now. We're going through this spread of the virus right now, and we could slow it, and maybe it will fall off some in the summer as the weather changes. We don't know for sure yet. But one thing is sure is that it is very likely to come back again next fall. Mm. We know that there's a possibility of a second wave, maybe even a likelihood of another wave of illness in the fall that we will have to be prepared for. Just like every year the flu starts up in October, this is a respiratory illness, and so we could face more of this in the fall. And if we prepare now and know now that things probably aren't going to be normal for a while, we can at least start thinking about it.
Janelle, is the government doing what they should be?
Well, that depends on who you ask, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, I know that we have federal agencies that are tasked with this, mm-hmm. and they're all working very hard mm-hmm. To make sure that everybody stays safe.
Well, I want to thank you. Give us a close, please.
A close? I guess I would say wash your hands, 20 seconds, you know, sing the ABCs twice while you wash your hands. Mm-hmm. The CDC recommended yesterday that people wear not masks, not like surgical masks, but bandanas when they go out to the grocery store. And what that does is if you are infected with the virus and don't know it, it can perhaps keep it from spreading to other people. So wash your hands, wear a bandana, and stay 6 feet away from everybody.
Chanel, Alicia, thank you so much for that. You're doing a great job keeping us informed, and we really appreciate the time.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm happy to come back anytime. Thank you very much.
I'm sure we'll be asking. Okay, thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Senior correspondent of Kaiser Health News in Washington, D.C., great job. We'll be back.
Hi, I'm Cliff Kelly, Vietnam veteran and host of America's Heroes Group, the game changer in radio, print, and digital media programming. We are a roundtable talk show where information, resources, and referrals are provided intentionally every Saturday to empower our military population on WVON 1690 AM, the iHeart Radio app from 4 to 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. Please visit our website at www.americashg.org. Hi, this is Cliff Kelly, the host of America's Heroes Group. If you or a loved one has been injured in an accident or the result of malpractice, you have only one chance to get the compensation you deserve. You need a law firm you can trust with experience and resources who will fight on your behalf. With a proven track record of excellence both in and out of the courtroom, call Seidman, Margulis, and Fairman at 312-781-1977 for a free consultation, or visit SeidmanLaw.net. That's Seidman, S-E-I-D-M-A-N, law.net.
Hi, we're the National Women Veterans United, the proud sponsors and partners of the Americans Hero Group.
Our mission is to ensure that women veterans are aware and have access to their VA benefits, resources, and entitlement. We monitor current or pending legislation that may impact VA eligibility and services. And we provide a safe place for women to come relax. We have a meditation room. They can get food, clothing, housewares, whatever emergency services they may need.
We're the only women veterans center in the state of Illinois. We are members of the Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, Coast Guard, National Guard, and the Reserves.
Hey, Cliff, where can a veteran business owner go on the south side of Chicago for breakfast, lunch, and dinner meetings?
I'm a veteran, and that's an easy answer. Pearl's Place on 39th and Michigan. Pearl's Place has free parking available across the street. Reasonably priced, quality food that tastes delicious. Veteran owners, there's no place like Pearl's Place.
Hi, I'm Sister Soldier, proud partner of She Voices on America's Heroes Group. She serves, she matters, where your change becomes empowered. Also, watch me on the web at SheVetInspires.com or YouTube. Remember, I'm every woman because I am just like you.
33 on the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. And, of course, this is America's Heroes Group. I'm Cliff Kelly. And we have a lot of our folks on. We're always happy to talk to a number of issues. America's Heroes Group Roundtable on Public Policy. And we're going to start off with our good friend, Dr. Damon Arnold. Doc, how are you? Dr. Arnold, are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you.
I think we got bumped.
Huh?
This is Ernesto. I'm on.
Okay,
Ernesto.
Rochelle's on.
And Sean Claiborne.
Yeah, Sean's on. And
Dr. Arnold.
Okay, everybody's there. That's what I want to know.
Okay.
That's what I want to know. Doc, I want to start off with you because we had a CNN audio that we wanted to turn to the article. Okay, article in the Washington Times wants you to respond to the fact that the virus cases have nearly tripled in a week. What's your professional opinion on that?
Okay, the Washington Times article, yeah, they had one on April 2nd, and it was about the military coronavirus cases nearly tripling in a week. And what they were saying is that the virus, which is COVID-19, there's a virus called SARS-CoV-2 that causes the coronavirus disease. And they were saying there's a total number of cases that increased from 652 to 1,638 cases in less than a week, so almost 3 days. So the doubling time really accelerated. And they said that also it wasn't just, the service members themselves, but also contractors, people who were in civil service employees, mm-hmm. and then also some of the family members of some of the service members as well. So it looks like it was really accelerating, and this forced the Department of Defense to have some kind of reaction to it, and I think it's understandable. There's a understandable balancing point that the military has to contend with. For everyone that has served in the military, they would understand this, between military readiness for national defense and that of force protection from the coronavirus. So we have to protect our military personnel, but we also have to be ready to respond to any given moment to a military threat that poses itself to our country. Mm-hmm. And it's undoubtedly led to a statement made by the Defense Secretary, Mark Esper, from the Pentagon, and he said that he was insisting that the armed forces find a way to both protect troops from the rampaging virus while still performing the military's essential operations. And I think this is really important. The phrase preserving the force is military parlance for keeping a military that is fit, which means that it's well rehearsed, ready to deploy, and ready to deploy. So those run counter to our social distancing right now that the medical professionals are saying is required, must be in place. And so in order to treat this novel coronavirus, so we are now at a HEPCON, which is a acronym used by the military. So it's a public health emergency management within the Department of Defense actually has this acronym that's health protection condition. And so we have a different levels. We have five levels going from zero to alpha, bravo, Charlie, and delta. Mm-hmm. And delta is when it's severe and widespread, and you have person-to-person transmission occurring. So they are actually pushing us. At that point, they were saying Charlie. Now it's moved to delta, mm-hmm. where they're trying to keep people stay at home and making mm-hmm. sure that we protect the reactionary forces, the acute
reactionary forces. Let me ask you one other question while we have enough time. It was a CNN audio where a staff sergeant, Wesley Black, diagnosed with colon cancer, because of burn pits from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yes.
Yeah. What about that? I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
Hold on a minute.
Yeah, it's going to play.
We're going to play it. Yeah. CNN.
We're talking about the health problems that veterans and active duty service members have begun to exhibit because of their exposure to burn pits. These are giant burning trash piles. They're sometimes acres in size that the military used to burn waste in Iraq and Afghanistan. These were the answer to how do you dispose of trash in a war zone when you can't just run down to the local landfill. There was a new survey by the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America that has found nearly 90% of post-9/11 veterans were exposed to burn pits. And of those exposed, 9 in 10 said that their health issues could be related. Joining me now is Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America CEO and former Navy officer Jeremy Butler, whose organization launched this survey. And we also have retired Staff Sergeant Wesley Black. He is a veteran of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. He has incurable stage 4 colon cancer due to burn pit exposure. And Wesley, we tell your full story. It's an unacceptable story. It is also a story of just how much you have given, and we tell the story at cnn.com/homefront. We describe what goes into these burn pits, which is pretty much everything. You told us this: human waste, medical waste, plastic, rubber, food, big screen TVs, beat up Humvees. Tell us, after these massive piles of trash are doused in diesel and jet fuel, which are known carcinogens, and set on fire, tell us what your experience was like, how close you were to these, and what it was like to breathe this air.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Of course.
So the biggest issue that it comes across as is these burn pits, if you imagine just a football-sized field of burning trash, and it's pouring out hundreds of cubic liter volume of toxic smoke, and it looks just like a giant burning field. It irritates your throat. It irritates your eyes. It gives you respiratory problems, and unfortunately for me, it led to some more serious health complications. So,
yeah, that's right. You were diagnosed with colon cancer that had spread to your liver and lungs. You were told you had 3 to 5 years to live, and that was over 3 years ago. You have a wife.
Yes, ma'am.
You have a small son. Tell us what it's been like dealing with this, and also the fact that you think you didn't get care that could have saved your life.
Yeah, so it's been rough. My wife is my hero. She's had to take on quite a bit. And my son is 3, he's going to be 4 in a couple weeks. And, it's at the point now where thankfully he doesn't understand what's going on. But, it's only a matter of time before he finally realizes that something's wrong. He knows that daddy goes to the hospital all the time. But my family has had to sacrifice so much now. I left the combat zone 10 years ago.
That's something. We wish you well, that's for sure. Dr. Arnold, what do you think about that?
First of all, I want to extend my sympathy and my... every service member is like a family member to me, and mm-hmm. to see Staff Sergeant Wesley Black go through that is just absolutely a horror to me. And one of the things that was mentioned, is that approximately 90% of the people who are in Afghanistan and Iraq were exposed to these burn pits. And I know as personally I was myself, and I, always used to make comments about it because it was something that would cause some irritation, and there was actually a case that came up, and it was in February of 2018, where a federal judge of the U.S. Department of Labor ruled that an exposure to open-air burn pits was actually linked to a service member's lung cancer, and it was not adopted by the Department of Defense or the VA. But there was metal and rubber and chemicals and other waste that were actually involved with that were known to be carcinogens, cause cancer-causing chemicals and toxins that people were exposed to. And when you are exposed to it, you can actually develop things. It's linked to things like asthma, chronic bronchitis, coughing that doesn't, you know, go away, and difficulty with breathing, headaches and migraines, heart conditions, leukemia, lung cancer. I mean, you can go on and on, gastrointestinal issues as well. And we're seeing, you know, higher rates of cancer in those members who are returning from that theater. And similar to, you know, and thank God that they actually approved it for our Vietnam veteran members with respect to Agent Orange. But I'm hoping that we actually have a quicker turnaround time on this issue, and that people are actually taken seriously when they come back and start talking about these complaints. Because many times the people who are listening to them, there is no specific test for it, but you should be listening to the history and making sure you document things appropriately if you are a VA physician. Absolutely. And you are actually examining someone. It's a disservice to our service members not to.
Thank you so much, Doc. This is, I tell you, it gets worse and worse. Listen, here's an audio, CNN audio.
Now that's how you send out one of the greatest captains you ever had. The GOAT, the man for the people.
To me, that demonstrated extremely poor judgment in the middle of a crisis, because what it's done, it's created a firestorm.
This is a situation where a Navy captain was removed after warning the people on his ship about this problem with the poison, the virus. Ernesto?
Yes, yes, I'm here, Cliff.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
Well, I think that the captain... Brett Crozier was his name, and is his name, and I think certainly he is a hero for what he did. And, you know, you're on an aircraft carrier that carries, I think his ship, USS, and this came from Newsweek and CNN, carried nearly 5,000 soldiers.
Sure.
Sailors.
Sailors.
Men and women, sailors.
And pilots and everybody else, yeah.
Yeah, right. And everybody else, pilots, because, I mean, on that ship, you've got, you know, and especially the guys who, the enlisted people, they live in cramped quarters. They've got three bunks, you know, like racks, they call them, and it's three to a rack. And they're in very tight quarters. And, you know, last week you had three sailors who had tested positive for for COVID-19. Then 2 days later, he had 25 on this past Tuesday. He had 70, then Thursday he had 100. So he's reaching out to the Navy, Department of Navy, and his admirals and people above his rank. And I guess nothing was being done. And so he's communicating. He's going through the lines of proper lines of communication. But I don't know whether he put it out there or somebody put it out there, and it ended up his hometown newspaper, the San Francisco Chronicle, and the Navy. And then he's relieved by this Admiral Stuart Baker, who then, of course, reports to the Acting Secretary of the Navy, and Moodley, who is the Acting Secretary, and then, of course, Esper's over him. But then they claim that the White House, they got no direction from the White House to relieve him of duty, and that it was simply the admiral that did this. But why wouldn't the White House know that you have a nuclear aircraft carrier? It has planes on it, you know, all kind of jet planes. You've got a nuclear reactor on the plane, on the ship. You've got you've got personnel, almost 5,000 personnel, and nobody was doing anything. So, you know, the sailors feel like the captain had their back. And I think he's a hero, and even Teddy Roosevelt's ship is USS Theodore Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt's great grandson called Captain Crozier a hero for what he did. So I think that I hope people remember things like this. I mean, how you can turn your back on people who are in cramped quarters, and we know just breathing alone will spread the virus. Not even mention coughing and singing or talking loud, and it's ridiculous that nothing was done. Luckily, 1,000 of them, they shipped. The ship is now in Guam, and they let 1,000 off immediately. They're going to try to let some other sailors off, and I understand those some of the sailors who have tested positive are in hotel rooms and maybe hospitals. But this is a shame because that could have spread so quickly.
Yes.
On a nuclear aircraft.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Captain's a hero.
I agree.
Can I say one quick thing about that? With that Nesso thing, it's like, you know, Theodore Roosevelt used to say, you know, speak softly but carry a big stick.
Yeah. Right.
This guy spoke loudly and carried a big stick.
Yeah.
That's
exactly right.
And they are very appreciative of it. And this could not be, he's getting no response from the chain of command, and he had to put it out there to save lives. And undoubtedly,
he did the right thing.
He probably saved hundreds of lives.
I agree with you.
So,
go to Reveal News, and Trump says he's protecting veterans. VA workers says they're forced to work without safety precautions. Rochelle, what do you think about that?
I'm present and accounted for, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you know what? I'm glad about that sailor using common sense. That's all I'm going to say, and I'll leave it right there.
Right.
But, you know, with Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting of March the 23rd, the workers are saying that they're really not receiving the support that they need. You know, they're forced to work without safety precautions, too. And they're working around a lot of veterans who are, you know, elderly, they're 90 years and older. The VA has got more than, you know, 170 hospitals with 9 million patients across the states, you know, and they're not being tested either, they're saying. They're being forced to work pretty much untested and being told that, you know, if they don't have symptoms, that they should really just keep working, which is what it boils down to. Now, keeping in mind that the VA was already reportedly 44,000 understaffed from the frontline health care. You know, and when you talk about protection and being able to have masks and gloves and the things that they're needed, you know, the health workers don't have to lie about they're not getting that support. They're not getting those supplies for them. It has to have some truth to it. You know, of course, a lot of them are, you know, dealing with at home issues too. So they have to come and work under those conditions that are not, you know, really talked about a lot of times too. They had 204 cases and the staff, they were not actually tested during that era either. You know, that time from when they were counting these cases, they're not getting what they need. And it's shameful. We should be ashamed as America that, you know, with all the things that we have going on, you're looking at the different facilities from New Orleans with the highest cases, 65 cases, 20 in quarantine, and then you have 44, you know, inpatient ones that have been affected by this virus, and they're short with gloves and masks, and, you know, they need protection. And what they've been told is that we'll get you the stuff, and I guess that's supposed to mean they're going to eventually get what they need. And I do know, like in Chicago, at that Halsted Care Center at 77th and Halsted, they're screening, like, appointments for the VA. They're in a proximity that is not distanced out among the employees there. Those employees are not tested when they come in, but they're testing employees. And even though they're not the medical care, they still are a part of the VA, and they should still have those same protective categories set up for them. You know, and if it's in Chicago, you hear that it's in Wisconsin also, that, you know, the clinics are not getting what they need. They don't get masks. One of them said that she didn't get masks until a half hour or an hour after her shift, you know, and already she's been testing patients doing her duty, you know, when they come into the hospital. Some employees reported that they, you know, were getting the symptoms, and they're actually exposing other, you know, patients there. So, you know, I don't think that we're doing what we should do, you know, from the White House perspective. He says a lot of things, but that secretary also needs to be a part of that administration that is reporting back, because veterans have a large population of patients And, you know, we don't hear about that. It's been small bits and pieces where we're hearing about the veterans. So we need to do better by our veterans. They deserve it. They earned it, you know, and this is always that case where we take two steps forward and now we take nine back. So, you know, we need to pray about that and keep our men and women, you know, in our prayers that are having to deal with the VA. And we have to thank those, too, that are standing on that line, that are doing what they need to do and compromising their own health and their families by going to their jobs everywhere. The least we can do is make sure that they have all those things that will protect them.
Rochelle, good point. Thank you so much. Appreciate that comment. We also now want to mention ABC Channel 7 News, an audio, ABC 7.
Guard officials decided to open this testing facility, and they opened it this morning. The I-team was on hand when the first of the first responders arrived to be swabbed. Police, fire, paramedics, and healthcare workers started lining up for drive-through coronavirus tests. The operation run by more than 100 newly activated Guard members, many seen in uniform here. The perimeter carefully controlled by Chicago police, and only certified credentialed first responders were being allowed in. No family members, according to authorities. About 250 tests per day.
Now, these are our professional doctors, our nurses, our medical professionals that are supported by logistics folks that are there to manage that line and to help, you know, our neighbors, our community, folks in our community to get through and be tested. Today they started out with the first responders.
Test givers in personal protective gear visible at work inside this unmarked and repurposed warehouse facility taking swab samples from first responders. There is a premium on getting first responder tests back quickly and achieving a faster turnaround time on all COVID testing, according to Weiss Memorial Hospital internist Dr. Eric Mizuno, who talked with the I-team this afternoon.
The sooner we know what's going on with you, the sooner the patient can know that I'm fine and I don't need to worry about it, or we have something to deal with. I know what to tell the patient. And so these PCR machines, they should typically run samples within 3 hours.
Eventually, that National Guard testing facility will transition from first responders to the public, but there is real pent-up demand in the first responder community for these tests, so it's unclear how long they will actually be doing just that before they can transition to the public. The first responder test ran out for the day at 2 o'clock this afternoon, and the arriving first responders still in line were told to come back tomorrow.
Thank you. All right. Let's go to Brother Hall. Brother Hall?
Hello.
Hi. Go right ahead. You're on.
Hey, Cliff, and to your guests.
Yes.
Yeah, right. My concern, Cliff, is the brothers and sisters that's up under the Vidocs that are veterans. I know of some because, as you know, I'm not feeding now because, you know, I don't want to put myself in a situation, but I know for a fact, and I never thought I'd see the day that it would be discrimination against the homeless. You know, now, I give the governor and the mayor praises for the efforts, but, you know, if they come out and see for themselves, they would see it, particularly up on the 51st in Wentworth, Archer and Stewart, right off the expressway of Halstead and maybe about 19th. You know, so I heard them say that they were getting the homeless off the, you know, off the street, and I just don't see it, not on the south end. So, and there's a lot of veterans out there that have paid their dues to protect us.
You're right.
To serve.
Yeah.
To me, like you say, all politics are local.
Yep.
This is local as well.
Thank you so much.
I'm more concerned about our local elected officials addressing this issue, and particularly with the social distance.
Appreciate
it. We got people on Channel 5 are saying the mask doesn't mean anything. You know, now people are telling us we need to mask up or stay in the house. Can anybody clear that up? You know?
Yeah, I got you. Before we run out of time, let's go to Sean. Sean, hi.
All right, to answer Brother Hall's question, the main thing that the Department of Defense and also for the health officials are saying is that when you wear a mask, that is helping you protect other people primarily. Dr. Arnold's even mentioned before in our show that the mask itself, the N95 mask, is not going to do a lot to protect you, personally from the particles from the virus itself. But if you are sneezing or coughing, you can trap some of the germs from coming out from your mouth. That's the most important thing. I also wanted to comment on the what we talked about with the National Guard. One thing people need to understand is that there's a lot of rumors, and even the Department of Defense have addressed this issue, that this is not an attempt to start martial law. This is not a federalization of the National Guard. The National Guard is there to serve and protect and also assist. They're not a primary first responder. They're more like a secondary responder. So as guardsmen, what we do is we go in and we support the local establishments to help get the materials. And we do everything from helping to build the hospital. For example, we converted the McCormick Center into a medical facility that can take 3,000 beds. Or we can just sweep up and clean up the mess, the trash from the leftover debris, the stuff from this operation. That's what the Guard is primarily designed to do.
Okay. Sean, thank you so much. And the rest of our...